dangling the gap, extending control, a buckle and bump, redirect your force. Hey guys, welcome to episode 9 of the Jiu-Jitsu Geeks podcast. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, E.T. E.T., how are you?
Good, Aaron. How you doing, man?
Doing well, doing well. We're calling this episode Rolls of Fury.
Yeah. There's really, when I type in this into the Mac, I've got to call it something to differentiate it from every other episode. So I give it crazy, crazy titles sometimes. So don't read too deeply into any titles.
Yeah. I posted a blog post last night about another podcast, the Fight Works podcast, which is I think one of the first ones.
Are they new? Oh, they're old.
Yeah, they've been
haven't
around
heard of
for
those
a
guys.
Bit. They've been around for a little bit, and
I wish them success.
Yeah, we wish them well. they're only on like episode 200 and something. Yeah. But yeah, I'm sitting there trying to think of a title for it, because again, you got to post them in for the blog post too.
Right.
It's always kind of funny trying to do that. But guys, we've been off for a little while. There's been a no reason for that other than life and jiu-jitsu get in the way. Sometimes for ET and I, and those two things come first, so we're sorry about that. We're going to try to be a little more consistent with the blog posting and the podcast. But we also wanted to leave. We were really honored and happy to get Nino and Gordo in for an interview.
Yeah,
not only are they just two huge names in jiu-jitsu, but to be able to sit down in front of them after you do a seminar with them. Not over the phone, not over Skype, just sit down and chat with those guys was really awesome. But one thing we didn't cover that E.T. and I got to do was do a seminar with both guys. So we want to talk a little bit about that. Maybe not try to obviously teach you a technique over a podcast,
but just some takeaways that we got from both seminars. And then we'll get into other stuff, but we wanted to hit on this too, so we can just talk about our experience with those guys.
Yeah. And I think chronologically, the first one we went to in the year was Nino.
That was Nino.
Yeah. And one thing, I took a lot of things away from Nino, but his seminar, and I said this in the podcast, that really struck me as different, besides what he was teaching, was he was very theoretical.
Right.
In what he was showing us. There weren't a whole lot of moves taught, but man, the content, the nuances, and where you could take that.
Yeah.
You take that move and that position into other things. And what he's relating to is how can you put it into your game?
Right.
So maybe you're not real flexible, so from the spider guard you'll set up, as an example. And he just went on and on about that. It was really great.
Yeah, it's really interesting the insights he had.
Yeah. It turned out to be I forget the numbers, but it turned out to be a really high-level seminar.
It was something I think that if you were a white belt and you were to take that, and maybe you've only been practicing for 4 months, you might not get the same takeaway as somebody who's been doing it for a few years.
And I don't know, we didn't ask this, but my guess is looking at the participants there were far more black belts and brown belts. Probably than anything else.
Yeah.
And certainly once you add purple in there, then, I mean, I don't know if there were many white belts.
I'll ask one or two.
Yeah, maybe. And not many blue belts. It was a really high level seminar. And so I think he might have talked to his audience a little bit, which was really cool.
Yep.
So, did you have any other thoughts about that one, E.T.?
Well, for me, what he taught with the omoplata and the go-go plata and the spider guard, those are not the most traditional jiu-jitsu moves.
Sure.
They're I don't want to say they're recent, additions to the jiu-jitsu, Brazilian jiu-jitsu arsenal, but they're not something that you would probably find in 1950 Gracie, academy.
Yeah, it's not in Helio's original book.
No, not at all. So he was, the way he could, to try to articulate this, if you were to ask just somebody who's been practicing for a few years, hey, show me some stuff from the spider guard, they might be able to show you one or two things, and maybe their game's not super developed, because like I say, it's not the most basic of moves. Nino can really articulate and show the super finer points of some of the most, some of the more misunderstood jiu-jitsu positions.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for somebody who, you think of Tengia as the spider guard expert,
mm-hmm.
and there's a few guys that use it really, really well. So you think, okay, those are the guys that would be able to elevate your game. Well, Nino comes in and he can just blow you away with his understanding of that position.
Yeah.
He may not be known for it. He's known for the omoplata.
Right.
But he's showing you just some awesome stuff from Spider Guard, which really shows you his understanding of a position that he's not exactly known for.
Right, right. And, yeah. And I mean, he, you know, if you think he's, you know, it's funny because you meet these guys, and we've had a great opportunity to meet some guys who are really well known for certain positions.
Yeah.
Nino's a great example. Gordo's another one that we'll get to in a minute. But the thing that you quickly realize, and of course, if you watch any of Nino's fights or his tournaments, you see it. But, man, these guys have carved out a specialty for something that some physical attribute that they have or don't have. Nino's is certainly his flexibility.
Right.
But, man, you look at I mean, you know, that's not to say Nino's not an absolute beast on mm-hmm. top and, you know, knows, you know, just tons of ways to pass the guard.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's always funny when you get to meet these guys and they start to go on to other things and, you know, it's just amazing how good they are, I guess.
Right.
You know, and how well-rounded they are. But one thing that, you know, another thing I took away from that and, you know, was talking about, you know, it's a lot of these high-level guys, when they get into their specialty, it's not anything that they forced. You talk to him about it. You know, Nino didn't say, man, I want to do the omoplata. I want to do the rubber guard. He was just really flexible and was comfortable there and naturally got there.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good tip for guys, you know, once you start to get up, you know, blue, purple, and start to develop your game at those levels to, you know, go with your strength, work your weaknesses. But, you know, definitely go with something that's comfortable for you and you're good at.
Right.
To develop your own game and a really strong point.
And, you know, something just to interject this point with Nino is I was listening to another podcast where it was Open Mat Radio where John Danaher, he had made some statements that I know a lot of people really, they analyzed. One of them was the fact that he doesn't think that the past generation of champions, which I think Nino would fall in because he's taken some time off from competing.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, quite a few years. They couldn't hang with the current generation of champions.
Mm-hmm.
And the week after, mm-hmm. or the 2 weeks after our podcast with Nino, he went and fought at the World Jiu-Jitsu Expo. He fought Bill Cooper, who is just a current name on the scene and tearing it up. And he...
They tied.
It was a tie.
Well, you know, Bill got the decision, but off of an advantage. But man, if you watch that,
and that's very, very controversial. Yeah. We watched that. Really, they could have tossed a coin to give him to the winner.
Yeah.
But to Nino's credit, here's a guy who's been building his academy for the past few years, and he's not, you know, trying to go out win ADCC and keep his name at the top of the jiu-jitsu circuit. But he went out there and he tied with one of the top guys. So hats off to Nino, man. Once you get to that level, you're a warrior for life.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that was an interesting comment. And, you know, if we can jump off on that a second. I mean, when he says that, the first name that comes to your mind is Hickson.
Right.
You know, certainly someone who hasn't competed in quite a while. So he's saying someone maybe, you know, I'm putting words in John's mouth. Maybe he didn't mean Hickson's generation, maybe he meant older. I don't know.
Right.
But the first thing that pops into my mind, of course, is Hickson. And you hear reports of Galvao and rolling with him and saying, you know, Hickson just, you know, toys with him in certain positions. And,
right.
You know, they just work positions and he has trouble with him.
Can't escape his mount and stuff
like that. Yeah. Yeah. And there certainly becomes a point, you know, when you hit an age that your physical attributes drop, but hopefully your skill and technique have come up to a level that that surpassed that. So.
I think your understanding and your awareness just become that much fine-tuned.
Yeah.
And it's one of the things where, you know, maybe you don't have the gas tank you did when you were 25 because you're not doing circuits constantly.
Right.
But you still can tell before somebody shrimps out of your move. You know, you still know how to checkmate.
Absolutely.
You know, when you have to.
Absolutely. So that's a good podcast, though, guys. And if you're not a fan of John Danaher, you know, look, read Henzo's first book, which John wrote a good bit of, and listen to any interviews you can with him. He's a sharp guy, and I always enjoy what he has to say. So the second seminar that we attended, of course, and interviewed was Gordo, which I think Gordo went over, I guess what you'd say are some more traditional subs,
right?
Some more traditional techniques, and I've been to two Gordo seminars.
Been to two also, yeah.
Yeah, and they've both just been phenomenal.
Three. I don't know. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, there's been three. I missed one.
Yeah.
But, you know, the takeaway from that, the thing that amazed me, if you've ever been to any high-level seminar, you've seen it, but him walking around, you have just several black belts on the mat at that seminar. And, you know, say we're going for a straight arm bar from, you know, he sets it up from half guard, surprise. And, you know, he sets that up. And something, you know, you've seen a lot of these black belts too, but he's walking around and showing them nuances of that. And, you know, they're like, oh, wow. And, you know, adding it into their game. A move that I've seen a lot of those guys doing, they're proficient at, but he can still add to it. I mean, you get to somebody like Gordo's level and watch them teach, it's amazing at what he knows.
Well, to me, if you were to take that, just kind of extrapolate it, it'd be like if you're a transmission mechanic and you've replaced 50 transmissions in your life, you probably think, I've got this down.
I can change a transmission.
Change a transmission. You have, yeah. And people's cars are you know, running. Yeah. But then somebody comes in and says, hey, here's a much better way. Somebody's going to get a better ride out of this if you just do this, and this. And
yeah.
Boom, your whole business is changed. And that's what guys like Gordo can do to the jiu-jitsu world. He can come in and say, hey, do this, turn your hand this way, put a person's elbow this way, just a small tweak, or, you know, and that's an amazing pool of knowledge to have, you know.
He was showing a triangle escape when you're in trouble, kind of a last resort escape, and the guy really has a triangle on, you know, so what are you going to do, try to get out of it? He showed a really cool escape, and man, I was just breaking out of it, and having the muscle a little bit. He walks over and he goes, he puts his hand just kind of out of my peripheral vision and goes, all right, when you push to break the legs open, turn your head and look right at my hand. And he did it, and the guy's legs just immediately popped open. You know, once you start to add little things like that,
yeah.
It's just small, tiny, but make a huge and amazing difference. And
that's, you know, why jiu-jitsu's infinite, I guess. Yeah.
Even on a move that you know, maybe have done before or seen before. But both seminars were really, really good. Very, very different. I think.
Right.
And you know, in the way that they were set up, but both were excellent.
Yeah, I have to agree. Yeah. Gordo's great because you look at him and you just see he's a physically imposing man.
Yeah.
He looks just like a powerhouse, like a juggernaut, but he doesn't have what you would consider big man jiu-jitsu where it just relies on power. He's definitely super technical.
Yes.
And it's amazing.
Technique is astonishing.
Yeah.
It really, really is. And Nino's too, going back to that one. So both great seminars. If you have a chance to train with either one of them,
Jump at it
by all means. And of course, you know, if they're doing a seminar, I think Gordo's probably back in Brazil, but you know, Nino's opening up his academy in California. Or it's open.
He's got two. He's got, I think, a Long Beach and a Manhattan Beach
Academy. That's right, I believe, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you're out that way and listening to us, first, thank you. And second, you know, jump in there. I think you'd be a great full-time instructor, so if you're looking for a school.
Yep.
Well, let's get in a little bit about, there's been a lot going on in the jiu-jitsu world when E.T. and I were deciding what we wanted to talk about in this podcast. That there was so much out there with the world's going on and so many events, and a lot of it's been talked about, so, you know, maybe we won't get into the world so much. I think you guys probably know the results of those. And two things that have been talked about is Andre Galvao at the Worlds.
Yeah, his behavior at the Worlds and what led to him being banned from competition this year.
Yeah, and the second is Nick Diaz and not showing up at the Jiu-Jitsu Expo.
Okay, so let's dive into both of those and just see where our feelings on it, because I don't think I've talked to you about either one.
We haven't. They're both interesting topics. So, in short, we're not here to rehash what happened. I know what happened from other great podcasts who have interviewed these guys.
Yeah.
So, you know, look up the normal ones, Inside BJJ, and don't think the Fireworks podcast has done anything on it, but Radio has done a wrap-up of the Worlds, too.
Right.
With a guy, Jay Show, which was excellent also.
Let's talk about the Galvao thing.
Yeah.
Just to kind of, I will sum that up.
Yeah, please. Go ahead.
He had two students that were, he had a student that was competing. He was on the sidelines behind a barrier coaching, and he saw something. The ref didn't call something, or he made a bad call, and he jumped over, and he argued with the ref in a very abrasive way. And as a result of that, he was not allowed to compete at the whole weekend. He was banned. Yeah. And security actually, you know, escorted him away. Now, what people talk about, and I know he tried a Twitter campaign. He tried to get back to compete. Right. Now, let me ask you, Aaron, what do you think? Do you think he should have been allowed to compete? Because he is the big draw. He's probably helped carry the Pan Ams and DVD sales and stuff like that. And he's a big draw for the competition.
Yeah, let me back up real quick.
Okay.
And something I think, should he compete, you know, I'll answer that. Or should have been allowed to compete at the Worlds. But, you know, one thing when I saw this, it didn't surprise me that it happened. Not because of Galvao, not because of the situation. There is this wave of animosity, and you see it, you know, in kind of the beginning stages. Not necessarily beginning, it's getting some momentum against the IBJJF.
There is.
And their, and their rules, their judges. And so when I saw that there was an explosion, it did not surprise me. I think there's a lot of tension between the jiu-jitsu competitors. Some, not all. Yeah. Certainly some, I'm sure, love the IBJJF and their rules. But there's this definitely a subgroup that's going into, you know, Rose Gracie's putting together some submission-only tournaments. Eddie Bravo's doing something that allows some strikes on the ground also. So there's some change, big names are behind some different types of tournaments.
Right.
And with that momentum, with the distaste, I was not surprised to see that. I think it might be a product of a lot of strain against a large group of competitors in the IBJJF. Should he have been allowed to compete? You know, I think so. I'm really big on rules and procedures.
Yeah.
For the most part. But I think he's there under two different roles.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a student, if my instructor jumps out and protects me like that at a tournament, thank you. You know, how awesome is that? What are you expecting to do? That's his friends, and probably some of them are, I mean, really close to him.
Yeah.
As much as they train together. So, I mean, it's almost like, you know, there's a strong relationship there. And for them to expect him not to, not to react like he did, I think is, you know, they got to understand, and I think that they do.
Yeah.
So to not let him compete, I think he was there under two different rules, and you know, if they were unhappy with the way he did one, you know, I don't know if that should necessarily affect
how he does the other. Right? Maybe they should ban him from coaching his students, or
yeah,
you know,
certainly out for the day. Right. We need to interview the security guys.
Yeah.
That carried him out. How scared were they? And did they just ask him, please go with us?
Yeah. Hey, man, don't make a scene. Keep walking.
How do you escort him?
Hey, I'm a big fan. Can you walk with me?
Hey, listen, can you sign us on the way out?
Yeah.
What's up with your, private lessons somewhere?
Yeah. Yeah.
So is that what, I'm sure he very willingly went with security.
Yeah.
Because no one's taking Galvao anywhere he doesn't want to. What do you think? Do you think he should be allowed to compete? I hope you disagree with me, but I don't know.
Oh, I definitely disagree with you. And in here, the thing is, he didn't just have an explosion. He set the standard for an explosion at this tournament.
Mm-hmm.
If he had done just jumped over, or they had to restrain him and pull him back, and he said some things and walked away and mumbled, that's one thing. But when you jump over and you cause a scene on an event that's trying to run as smoothly as possible,
yeah,
I hate to say you got to be made an example out of, but you have to be dealt with.
Yeah.
Now I know there's a ton of time and money and marketing that kind of goes on with him and the Pan Ams, because you look at any DVD, his name's gonna be on the back of it. His name has been on the face of it. You know,
they've
made commercials about, you know, him being there to sell some of their products. He's a huge draw.
Yeah.
But I am a huge stickler for rules and etiquette and respect also. And if you do something like that, you've got to expect, if you do something like that, you've got to expect probably the harshest of punishments. And that's what he got.
Yeah.
So as much as I love to watch him compete, I also look at it and go, that does not represent jiu-jitsu. That's not the spirit of jiu-jitsu. So why don't we just remove him? Now, I do like your idea, because I didn't think about this. Now that you say it, you know, you got two different roles.
Mm-hmm.
Eliminate him in one of the roles for this year, but let him do the other. That would have been something to consider. you know, I don't know who, I know he, I saw the tweets that he sent out saying, you know, please, this is my life. And,
so he sent some to some pretty big names too. I know he tweeted Enzo.
And you know, at that point, I don't think that, and nothing happened because those tweets were just in vain. They didn't let him.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to put somebody who's a big name asked to go and allow you to do stuff like that. I mean, that took a lot of courage on Andre Galvao. And he showed a lot of humility afterwards. Yeah. But I have to think where, if I was in that situation, I would just be like, no, one and done.
Yeah.
Thanks anyway. Come back next year. But the sad thing is Galvao, at his level, might be in the last few years of elite competition because he's been going strong for so long.
Yeah.
And he's into MMA now. So I'd hate to think this is the last year of seeing him at this elite level. And I don't want to see him, you know, boycott the event. So out of hurt feelings. So that would suck. But I do think that they made the right call. And, you know.
Yeah.
You reap what, you know, you're paying for it.
Your actions. Yeah. And, you know, I say he has two different roles, but you can't ignore that obviously he's the same person.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I'm probably blinded a little bit by the fact that I wanted to see him compete. I like the guy a lot. There's probably a little bit of bias there. But a sad state of events, I think. And very unfortunate. Hopefully we'll see him back next year.
Yeah.
And not jump totally into MMA, and that's it for his jiu-jitsu career. So,
yeah, I hope not too.
So, Nick Diaz, and this one's been talked about quite a bit, so we won't spend too much time on it, but I'll let you go first on this one. He obviously did not show up for the big fight at the BJJ Expo. I listened to Cesar Imbruglia talk about it on Inside BJJ podcast. Yep. He had both of those guys on there. So they hashed it out, and Enzo kind of came out and made some statements, and it seems like everyone is pointing the finger at this guy, Junior, who I'm still not exactly sure who he is. But,
I don't know who he is either. It's hard to – I don't know who he is. But
yeah.
Obviously he's misspoken or maybe misled some people.
Yeah. And I think probably here's the deal with it. When you get a guy like Nick who is used to some level of professionalism and, you know, has fought at very, very high levels.
Yeah.
You know, and he expects this to be I'm just giving away free passes today, but he expects us. You get me on two guys I like. I suddenly become very biased. But you know, he expects some level of professionalism, and you know, once he sensed that was not there and something was afoot, he was out. And you know, with what he has at stake, and you know, it's a slippery slope argument. But you know, maybe in his mind, he goes, "Well, man, if they can't get the weigh-ins right."
Yeah.
And if they can't get X, Y, and Z correct, you know, what's going on with the rules? What's going on behind the scenes? You know, he's got a lot on the line again. So if he sniffs something out, I can't blame him for not wanting to do it for it being poorly run.
Yeah.
At the same time, just not to show up and not say anything. He should have came out very publicly, I think, and said, "Hey, you know, I got a big career. Love to have done this, but something's foul. Here's why, and I'm not going to be there."
Yeah,
and I think people would have understood probably a little bit more.
Right.
What are your feelings on that one?
I'm with you on this one. Mm-hmm. I've become a fan of the Diaz brothers over the past couple of years. And I'm with you because if you have laid down a few rules, because first off, Nick Diaz was going to give the purse to charity. Yeah. It's not like, you know, I'm sure he's on a year suspension now from the Nevada State Athletic Commission for his test, a dirty test that he took. But if you've got a name on the line and you say, "Look, I don't want to fight any guys who are going to be MMA draws or MMA guys so that, you know, they can make a name off me if they beat me, and I'm going to give my purse to charity." You've got nothing to really gain in this. You're doing something for charity, and it's not like it wasn't ran like a UFC weigh-in where two guys come out, they can step on the scales, they can see it. If he's told, "Hey, Braulio's over, he's overweight, a good significant amount."
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you're like, wait a minute, is he going to do MMA? You hear he might do MMA at some point. Those are two things that you stipulated that you didn't want to, fight somebody with these two things. So I would have been like him. I would have bowed out also. Unfortunately, it was at the last minute.
Yeah.
Like you, I think maybe he could have put out, Nick Diaz does this thing where he doesn't show up for an event or he throws a monkey wrench in something and then you don't hear from him in like 48 hours.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. That's kind of crazy, but that seems like his MO.
Yeah, he's done it before.
Yeah. So, but, you know, you just handle that a little bit more professionally.
Yeah.
You know, you communicate with Caesar and you say hours earlier because from what I understand, Brawley was standing on the mat.
Yes.
Waiting for Nick to walk out.
Yeah.
How does that even happen? See, I got to wonder how this is ran, how that event was ran.
Yeah.
If they allow you to walk out on the mat and wait for your opponent, but wait, nobody's seen your opponent.
Yeah.
Shouldn't they be waiting in the wings or a bullpen area?
Shouldn't they have known?
Yeah.
And maybe that, I don't know. That, I saw that and I wonder if that's a rule.
Yeah.
That to get the forfeit, you have to be, because he wasn't dressed out.
Right.
I think he had shorts and a hoodie, but, you know, wonder if he has to be out on the mat.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and ready to go to get the forfeit. So
yeah.
I give both guys a pass, and, because I like them both.
Right.
we'll see. I hope both come back around. I hope Nick does do a jiu-jitsu tournament, super fight at some point before his suspension is lifted.
Yeah, it'd be great to see him in the gi.
Yeah, it would be.
Or no gi.
Yeah.
So let's hit some products real quick.
Yeah, one thing, guys, we are currently working on, the great folks over at BJJ HQ sent us at the Tommy Rash Guard. Unfortunately, the size of it was too big for me, too small for ET, so we gave it to one of our training partners to wear and test it out for us, and he's been doing that. We're going to give it a few weeks. You can't tell much about a product, I don't think, after wearing it in a few classes.
So. No, you want to give it a few washes. This is a really, really nice-looking rash guard with good design on it. You want to give it a few washes, see how the seams hold out, see how the design holds out, see if it's, if it shrinks up on you too much, all that stuff. So.
Yeah, so and when we're done, we have some pre-pictures, we'll have post-pictures, we'll talk about the stitching, and we will have him on to talk about it along with the blog post about it. So that's coming up, I would say, fairly shortly. Whenever we feel the rash guard's gotten a good test, it'll be over. But until then, he's going to keep at it and keep on it. So, again, three rolls in a rash guard doesn't tell you much.
Right.
But thanks to the guys at BJJ HQ for sending us that, and to Tommy for making what appears to be a great rash guard so far.
Yeah, we'll get some feedback on that soon.
Yeah, absolutely. So, E.T., what are some – I know you've gotten a few things recently. Let's talk about some of those, maybe some of your favorite ones.
Okay. So first off, I've got to say I've been loving Round 5's latest line of action figures.
Yeah.
And I know, okay, guys, we're nerds.
Right.
We collect stuff. It's an MMA line, but they've got a lot of jiu-jitsu guys, like the Nick Diaz action figure, the BJ Penn and the Gi, the Hoist Gracie. They put out a bunch of cool, a new line, a bunch of cool guys. The two coolest I've got is I'm a huge Bruce Lee fan.
Yeah,
I'm and I've got, they got two Bruce Lee action figures out, one in his Game of Death uniform with a pair of nunchucks, and one in the opening scene, of Enter the Dragon, where he's got that little Speedo on.
Right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. That's your favorite one, huh?
That is my favorite one. Well, I've got both, but look, I've opened them. And they're on my display shelf at home. They're so cool because their likeness is just spot on. And there's more coming, but I love the Round 5 stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, you take a product, and I'll get back to one too. So what do you got?
Well, let me see. Recently, I got the a new collaboration between Show Your Roll, and I cannot think of the graphic designer who did it. So I'm sorry. I'll post the link. To your website on the blog, but your name's escaping me right now. But there's a collab. They had a guy, and he actually posted a cool picture of Kurt Osiander. and I don't know how Show Your Roll got hooked up with him. Maybe, whatever. I don't know that. But so Show Your Roll got with him, and they put it on a t-shirt, and I received it earlier last week. You know, honestly, I've had a couple Show Your Role t-shirts that I wasn't too pleased with in the past.
I have two, and I ordered this shirt also. It didn't come in, so I want to know, what do you think of this shirt?
Yeah, and the biggest problem with Show Your Role shirts in the past, at least the ones I've gotten, and not knocking their gis, I love their gis. I think they're the best, light, comfortable, and hold up. I'm not saying that. But some of their t-shirts, the printing on them is washed away after a few washes.
That's the problem I've had, yeah.
Yeah, it's been a little too thick. On the print, but this one is they did a nice job. It's printed well, it's screen printed, but it's done well. It's not too thick, and you know, the fit's a normal t-shirt. It's not a slim fit or anything like that. And Kurt's famous saying that he does a lot on his Move of the Days is earmuffs for any kids out there, but you fucked up a long time ago. And they put that actually right below the picture, really small, and they spelled it with you know, a couple characters. So you gotta really look to see what it
says. Okay, good, because I will wear this on Casual Friday at work. So I wondered about that.
Yeah, it's there, but it's too small to see, and B, you really gotta look to make it out. So you know, if you're kind of funny about stuff like that, I didn't really see that when I ordered it, but once I got it was cool. Yeah, it's something you can certainly wear.
It's such an obscure shirt also. And we kind of talked to somebody about this, Chris, one of our instructor and one of our honorary jiu-jitsu geeks, about who would buy something like that.
Yeah.
To the outside world, it looks like you just have the Geico caveman on a shirt. Yeah. To the inside circle of jiu-jitsu folks, that's a really cool reference.
Well, I wore it yesterday, and all that. You know, not to get too far into this, but it used to be, so we'd see a tap out t-shirt and you could ask the guy, hey, where do you train? And he would answer you where he trains. And now that that's certainly not true.
No, a lot of dick bags wear for a tap out. Earmuffs!
Earmuffs, in retrospect. But, you know, I wore it to the mall yesterday and I passed three guys in tap out t-shirts. Maybe they're MMA folks, maybe they're Muay Thai guys, I could care less about jiu-jitsu. But the cool thing was, I walked right past them. And they don't even notice. You know, I have Kurt Osander on a t-shirt. So you know, if you strike up a conversation with a dude wearing that, he's either going to be crazy or really into jiu-jitsu. And either way, you want to have a conversation with that guy. So I enjoy it.
Buckle up. It's going to be a good conversation.
I enjoy the obscure. Another thing that I want... Well, go ahead. You take one real quick.
I ordered some really cool stuff from Black Belt Magazine. Yes, they're a traditional magazine for traditional arts. They have, you know, they're one of the oldest publications. I think they're the first publication for martial arts. And back when I was doing the traditional martial arts thing, I got a lifetime subscription. So I still get the magazine, still read through it. But one of the cool things they're doing is they're doing this thing called, you can get it through their Facebook page. Mm-hmm. It's when they're reprinting every single cover. You can order it through their Facebook for like $9.95. It's like 18x12, any cover you want from all their past issues. And I got quite a few. I got I got a cover of Bruce Lee's first issue when it didn't even have his name on it, just have him with nunchucks in the Kato uniform.
Yeah.
I've got that was like 1967. I got one cover of Hoist Gracie back in the mid-90s. He's standing on a pile of bodies, and it says, "Jiu-Jitsu guys rule the... like King of the Hill." Right. And when I got another one of Hickson when Hickson had the cover.
Yeah.
And these are just all cover reprints. Mm-hmm. And now they're framed in my house. And my wife's not home. She's out of the country right now. When she comes back and looks in her living room, she's going to see a nice framed photo of Hickson. This might be taken down soon when she gets back. But for right now, there's a big framed Hickson cover Black Belt. But anyway, if you're into collectibles and stuff like that, you know, go to Black Belt's Facebook page. They got a link there to where you can reprint these covers, and it's very cool. It's a conversation piece. You get them framed, it's like a piece of art. Yeah. You know, so I just wanted to give a plug out for that, because that's cool stuff.
That is cool and pretty cheap too for a big a big print. One of the things that I also want to talk about is Moya. I hope I'm saying that right, guys. So I'm sorry if I'm not. Moya brand geese. I don't have these, but our instructor actually got two of them: the White Sands and the Blue Dial. They are really awesome geese. I've looked at both, rolled with him, you know, while he's had them on, and really taking a good look at them. And just the design on them, it's very clean. The patches are done very nice. The fabric is done well. The pants are not ripstop. I don't think they're on the Blue Dial either. I know they're not on the White Sands, but I'm drawing a blank on the Blue Dial. If Chris got them, I doubt they are. But really good pants. I'm kind of going away from ripstop. not as big of a fan of it as I once was. And so, you know, if you're looking for a new gi, those are ones that I've seen, but I don't have. But I know are really good. We might have Chris on to talk about them after he's given them a few test runs, because he just got those. I have a competitor gi on the way, but I don't think that ships till mid-month. So
right.
We'll talk about that more also.
That's cool. Yeah. Oh, just got to mention our buddies over at 3150 have a bunch of new designs that just posted.
Yeah.
Probably about a week or two ago. I've got the Maeda with Roll,
mm-hmm.
and sure, another Homage series mm-hmm. shirt, and one more that I'm blanking on at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Another design. Really cool stuff. A lot of Mahalo. Really cool designs. Yeah, it says Mahalos
yeah.
and a little Shaka. I don't know. Cool designs. We love 3150. They're yeah. great guys.
Yeah.
So definitely please... please go over there and check those guys out. As well as Submission FC did let me just throw this out there. Submission FC did a print interview for us. There's a 5% off coupon mm-hmm. that's good until the end of the year that they included. So, I mean, that's tax, basically, yeah. on anything you order in their whole entire store. And they have that hemp ghee that everybody seems to want to get.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Just to go out there and check that out, guys, if you haven't read that interview and use that coupon.
Yeah.
Let them know the Jiu-Jitsu Geek sent you.
Yeah, and also, again, thanks to the BJJ HQ for the tatami rash guard. And anytime we get products to review, you know, we hope that by showing, you know, that, hey, neither ET or I are wearing it because the fit just wasn't for us. And that's not Tommy's fault.
It's no,
just,
not at all.
Just the large wasn't for either one of us. We thought it would be, and it wasn't. And so we gave it to a guy who was. It fit him perfectly. So, you
yeah.
know, we hope we want to give everything an honest assessment and an honest try. So if we tell you it's good, it really is good, and you know it's not after you know we wore it once. And yeah, it held up great. Well, you know, so we hope we're showing you guys that we want to give you a good review on products, and we will.
Yeah, we're gonna be fair on everything that we review.
Yeah, absolutely. We're appreciative of anything we get, but at the same time, we can't give it a good review if it's not. But luckily, the Tommy Rash card looks good so far. So I hope we can give that two thumbs up. So.
Well, let me just say this, because I haven't given this at the end of our podcast, but yeah. If you have any feedback, please email us at jujitsugeeks@gmail.com. You know, if you have anything you want to say or add or contribute or for us to talk about, please let us know. Or you can Twitter us at, what's their Twitter?
The Twitter is at the Jujitsu Geeks. So you can find us there. And
yeah.
Also on our Facebook too, Jujitsu Geeks. You can find our fan page. So you guys search under pages, or you know, just hit us up and send us an email. We'd love to hear from you guys, and the emails we've gotten have all been fun. One thing to look out for that I'm really excited about
yep.
is his first name is Christian, but it's the BJJ Globetrotter.
Oh yeah,
and he is from, you know, where he's from off the top of your head?
Denmark, Holland,
someplace. Denmark. I think you're right. Yeah. But he traveled around the world strictly just you know on the kindness of jiu-jitsu folks. And training at other gyms. He had a great blog, BJJ Globetrotter. Check that out.
That's an awesome blog. I think it keeps winning, like, best blog at the Fight Work Podcast poll.
And it should. It's really well written, really good. But his book is almost completed. I know that he has it on Kindle, because he has it posted on his Facebook, and he's done doing a final review of it. I think he's only, like, 5 chapters left to proof.
Yeah.
It's going to come out on Kindle first.
It's going to be a travelogue.
Yeah. It's coming out on Kindle first, and then it's coming out on the iPad as an app, and then later as a print piece.
Do you have a Kindle?
You know, I just purchased the basic level Kindle.
Did you really?
Yeah, and it's if you read a lot of books. Now here we're really jumping off jiu-jitsu. But if you read a lot of books,
just curious.
Yeah, I have the iPad.
I have the iPad also.
Sitting at a computer screen all day to come home and read a glowing screen will a lot of times give me a headache. So I picked up the Kindles on sale, and the basic one doesn't have a light behind it, and it really does look like ink on a page.
Oh, does it? Okay.
You need a light if you read at night, but you can read it outside in the sun. There's no glare. You know, I got the no touch one, which is kind of a pain. If you want to drop 30 more bucks, you can get the touch screen.
What is it, Ryan?
I think I got it on sale for like 77, 78 bucks.
Okay. That's not bad.
Yeah, it's really cool, guys. So,
I'm just curious.
Yeah.
Like sorry for the going off topic.
Well, you know, you can get one, you can pick up the BJJ Globetrotter book a little quicker.
Sounds great. I love a good travel log.
Yeah, that's my favorite book.
So. Yeah.
All right, guys, we got to run. We are using the facilities at at Air Academy, Top Game Academy, once again. And folks are coming in for open
mat. Well, they're lined up outside because I've locked the door.
We locked the door.
And it's hot outside, so.
Yeah, it's like 90. So before we kill our training partners, we're going to sign all.
Yep.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. Take care. Until next time.